Production. Recorded live.
You're listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more. Welcome to the show, the fifth episode of the Geocaching Podcast. I'd like to welcome any new listeners that we have and welcome the returning listeners that have listened before and this is not their first time. Today, this show is aired live on Saturdays, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you want to be on the show today, please call 724-444-7444, TalkCast ID 7525. On today's show, we have cache types from the Cache Wikipedia, and we have an interview with Bob Rich, who's going to talk about the Utah Parks Department and an opinion that he has for them. After the interview with Bob Rich, today we'll open up the line for comments. So let's start with our cache types from the Cache Wikipedia. There's a traditional type. This is mostly for you people who are new to geocaching. There's a traditional type, which is the cache that's most common to geocaching. It's basically just a container with a logbook and stuff like that. Then there's a multi-cache, which is where you have two or more locations, the final location being where the physical location is, or the physical container is. And there's most multi-caches will have a hint with a set of coordinates for the second waypoint. And let's see, what other kind of caches we have? There's a letterbox hybrid, which any of you who have been letterboxing before know how that works, where you get a clue to... you get written clues to where the final cache is at. There's an event cache where you can go and meet your friends and just have a date and meet and greets and find out, actually, meet other geocachers. There's a Sitto event, which is basically where you go in and cache in and trash out. You clean up your local area. Mega events, which is where there's at least 500 people that attend. And then there's Earth caches, which are basically a special kind of virtual cache where it must be educational, and it teaches something about the Earth science and how it relates to the geological area of interest. So that's our Cache Wikipedia terms of the day. So if you're not a subscriber to this podcast, please subscribe by going to geocachingpodcast.blogspot.com. You'll find all the feeds there. You'll find every past episode that we've had published, and you can also find show notes about everything that's going on. So today our guest is going to be Bob Rich, who has an opinion about the geocaching in Utah Park. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute you there, Bob Rich, and start here by telling me just a little bit about yourself, where you're at, and how long you've been geocaching.
Good afternoon, Alex. I'm located in Grand Junction, Colorado, which is on the central part or the western part of Colorado, halfway up between New Mexico and Wyoming, but pretty close to Utah. I've been caching here since 2002 and kind of spread my time between the winters in the hot part of Utah and the summers in the cool part of Colorado.
So how long have you been geocaching?
Well, since 2002, so that's almost 5 years.
Mm-hmm. How many finds do you have so far?
I have a little over 1,000 finds.
Well, that's pretty good. So today we brought you on the Geocaching Podcast because I read a story on the forums about an incident that you had with the Utah Parks Department. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Okay, it wasn't really an incident with the Parks Department. It was a new cache that popped up and then several others after that were listed as being owned by the Utah State Department of Parks. And it's the first I had seen anything like that. I hadn't seen any caches in the Utah State Parks before, but now it seems that the Utah State Parks is getting into the caching business. And as I mentioned in the first forum, I have no problems with paying a fee to get into the Utah State Parks for a day use fee or a camping fee or whatever. And I think it's very good that they allow geocaching in the parks, but I think what they're trying to do, at least from this first cache I saw, was to say, there's a new cache that popped up. We planted it. Come into the state parks And, of course, you'll have to pay your day use fee and then go on to describe some of the many other activities that you can enjoy while you're in the park, most of which require additional fees. And this just kind of struck me as being somewhat of a commercial type of cash, which I understand are prohibited.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing the guidelines from geocaching, they've just made an amendment to the regulations about disallowing commercial caches. By now they say, if you think it is a commercial cache, let us know, and we can discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
And my feeling was that I just hate to see things go in this particular direction where the next thing may be city parks will charge fees to come in for geocaching. Maybe private parks might bring people in for a fee to do geocaching. You know, if an individual geocacher plants a cache in a state park and notes, you know, you're going to have to pay a $5 or $10 day use fee to go in and find it, that's fine. He's not making any money out of it. But when the state parks themselves advertise to come into their parks to geocache, and that kind of bothers me. I've been to two of the Utah State Park geocaches. One of them was an interesting one, which I can describe later. The other one was an ammo can that was chained to the ice box right outside the door of the visitor center.
Hmm.
Now, you know, that to me, that's not in the spirit of geocaching.
Mm-mm.
So, whether it's a story or an incident or whatever, that's about how I stand at the moment.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys, if you're listening live and you want to be on the show, please call 724-444-7444, and the TalkCast ID is 7525. Bob Rich, I had, in the spirit of your post there, I had done some researching, and I found that one of our local county parks has a entrance fee to the park, and the Parks Department is placing caches there. But in this case, I found that you could park outside of the park and walk. Like, they have a parking lot that you can park outside and walk in. So for that, I felt that that was okay because I didn't necessarily need to pay the $5 entrance fee. I didn't feel like the Parks Department was getting into it to just do it for revenue. I felt like they were getting into it to bring people into their parks. But at the same time, they weren't saying you have to pay this $5 fee to get to our geocache. How do you feel about that?
I think that's probably okay with me. Many parks say you can walk in. If you drive in, there's a fee per vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even mind an individual placing, as I said before, placing a cache in a park. And I don't mind state parks advertising to bring people into the parks. I think that's great. I think they serve a good, you know, a very useful function of preserving small, nice areas of our environment. But I do, in the instances that I mentioned, really mm-hmm. feel strongly that they're using geocaching in my thought so far, a kind of a sloppy way to get people to come in and spend money on their parks.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that cache that you said you'd tell us about it later, the one you found interesting.
Well, the other one was, I don't know if it was the first state park they went into that they put a cache into, but I went in early one morning and there was no one around and it was a campground and I didn't see a particular place to pay. I followed a trail or a road to the vicinity of the cache and I parked in a parking area in the park. And that particular cache was a sprinkler control box that was buried in the ground. And I think there were probably three or four other campers that I can see in the area, all in motorhomes, because it was probably below freezing. And right in the center between where the three or four motorhomes were parked, there was a sprinkler control box in the ground. It was just getting light. It was cold out. I was looking up into hollow spaces and some of the burned out trees and under twigs and all that stuff. And the sprinkler control box just kind of seemed out of place there. And so I tried to lift up the lid of it and I couldn't get the lid up. And I know from my home sprinkler boxes that there are catches on the inside and most people break the catches off so the lid can be extracted easily. But this lid did not get extracted easily. And I probably did what I shouldn't have done. I grabbed some sticks and tried to put them in the hole and release the catch, and I couldn't. Went back to the car, came back with a Leatherman tool and tried to reach in and extract the or move the catch so it would lift up, and it wouldn't. And I went back to the car and I got a tire iron. And I came back and I was finally able to get enough pieces broken away from the catch, from the underneath catch, that I was able to get the lid out off, and there was the ammo can underneath.
And this is placed by the parts department.
That's right. Now, of course, what if, first of all, caches are not supposed to be buried.
No.
But, you know, this is one of those exceptions, you know, one of these exceptions. And what? And I was thinking afterwards, what if this was a real sprinkler control box, and it was really up, the cache was really up in one of the trees or something like that I had missed.
Mm-hmm.
And here I go and damage the lid of that sprinkler control box. And all of these are within view, maybe 50 feet away from each of three or maybe four other camping vehicles. Now, again, this was at first light, and they probably weren't awake yet, hopefully.
Yeah.
To me, it was a very silly place to place a cache. It was buried number two. It had a latch on it. That was,
yeah, you had to break into it pretty much.
I did, and it just was a very poor choice of what the state parks is trying to do. Now I can't imagine that this state park went out and found 20 or 30 or 40 caches and understood what was good and what was bad and the philosophy of geocaching, but they did understand that here's another way to bring people in, and we'll get a little more revenue into the parks.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have the feeling that they're using geocaching to do that, and that just rubs me the wrong way.
Now, I also noticed in your post that you said that you were asked to voluntarily place a cache that was 200 miles away
in a
park just because they wanted to cache in every park.
Yeah.
Did you go ahead and plant one then?
Oh, no. A friend of mine, one of my caching buddies in Utah, called me up one day and said there's the Utah State Parks would like to, what the way they put it to me was that the Utah State Parks is celebrating their 50th anniversary and they would like to have a cache in every one of their state parks by that time. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, this is great. You know, state parks are nice places. Having them have a cache in every park, great idea. And mm-hmm. I was asked, would I go down and plant one? And I said, well, where is it? The place they said was probably 5 hours' drive from my house, and I really didn't feel like driving 5 hours into another state to do it. And I thought about it for a couple of days, and then I declined, and my friend told me it's okay. They found someone else anyway.
Well, so is your friend part of the Utah Parks Department or not, or how did he get
hooked up with? He's not part of the Utah Parks Department. And I just was thinking that I would have gone down there and put my own cache in there and advertised it. Little be known to me that the Utah State Parks was trying to get people to do that and call it their own park, their own cache. I think.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think that geocaching, the cachers in Utah, the state parks, I think they should be able to develop a great reputation and rapport and do things together, and I think that's great. I don't know if we do it in Colorado or not, but I think it's good for geocaching and the parks to get together on things.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
But my objection is this little smell of commercialism. To use an ammo box chained to an ice machine right outside the entrance of Dead Horse Point State Park to bring people in to get a decal and then go on to do the other things within the park. That particular park, I don't think there are many other money things, but you have to go through the visitor center to get to that, which sells all sorts of stuff. To get to
mm-hmm.
that cache, it just doesn't strike me as my old-fashioned view of geocaching.
Yeah, where you can go out into a park and you can free park and go out into the forest and find a cache container where you don't have to pay. It's not commercial. You don't have to pay $5. You don't have to do all that stuff to do the geocache.
But let me correct you one thing. I have no objection to paying to go into a state park to go hunt a geocache.
As long as it's not placed there to make revenue.
As long as it's not placed there in order to bring people in to pay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I buy annual state park passes. I buy an annual federal park pass. So when I have to go into places like that, I can do that without paying. Recently caching in California in the National Forest, if you park anywhere in the National Forest, you have to have a permit on your vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fine. I don't mind that. You know, the users need to pay some of it. But what I object to is the park authorities and questioning what is next or who are next to say we're going to use geocaching to bring some revenue to our organization.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right to me. I wonder what would the geocaching.com, what Groundspeak would say about it. I wonder if they would say that this is not a correct use of geocaching.
Well, I think they have some issues that it is good for geocaching or good for them, and
mm-hmm.
that may be fine. There were three or four pages of forum posts on this subject. I got out of it because it deteriorated into, parks run at a deficit, and of course we should pay if we go in and use the park and so forth. And this wasn't the gist of my thinking, but that's the way it deteriorated too, so I stopped posting to it.
I was going to say, like you said before, you don't have any problem with paying to use a cache or paying to use a park. It's the fact of they're placing caches just to get revenue.
That's right. I mean, it's like the parks going out and soliciting baseball teams to come in and use their baseball facilities at $100 a night or something like that. This is the same type of thing, only they're using geocaching as a lure, to me, as a lure to get people in. And I have a little problem myself in that I like to clear all the caches within a radius of my house, and when new ones
mm-hmm.
pop up, I don't like them to... I like to get rid of them by finding them.
Yeah.
So I will go out and find some of these type caches. I have recently just stopped going out for 1-1 micros that they're no fun at all anymore, and I don't need those.
Mm-hmm.
It's
kind of like you said earlier, it's in your post, it's kind of like Walmart charging a fee to go to their parking lot to find an LPC.
That's right. They will allow you to come into the parking lot if you go into the if you pay 50 cents or a dollar to park there, but you have to come into the store to pay the fee. And then they'll give you a hint as to where the cache is, and you go out and do it. They're not requiring you to buy anything in the store, but maybe a dollar for parking, and you've got to come in the store to get that final clue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, interesting, I just came across another state park in Colorado, in Utah, that has another cache that you must go into a state park museum. I may be a little bit off of my facts. Go into a state park museum that's open Monday through Friday or limited hours and research something, and then for the final clue, you go up to the front desk and they will tell you the final clue as to where the cache is.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't thought that much about that. I wouldn't go out of my way to do that myself. You never know with any caches, including the state park ones I've mentioned, the Utah. So many people go on and say, nice cache, great idea, blah, blah. The micros, a couple micros hidden by me recently. Unfortunately, micros are coming to Colorado now. But at any rate, they started on the coast and they worked their way in. But at any rate, now, lamppost caches and, the comments, wow, great hide, this was really fun.
And tell you about 30 or 40 of them, and then they're so boring and mundane that you know exactly where they're at as soon as you pull into the parking lot.
But the sport of geocaching has spread out in so many different directions, and Groundspeak has originally allowed it to expand in many directions, more than I think originally thought of, and that's good. And then in cut back and curtailed and formed in some of the areas, such as the location lists and the virtuals and so forth, and then even massaged a little more, allowing the earth caches to come back in, which I personally, and I'm getting off the topic here, but since I feel earth caches are not caches, but they are very educational and informative. So how do you balance that? Do you allow that in because it's really informative to many people or educational, or do you toss it out because it's a virtual?
I know as a family we like doing the virtuals because we got to know a lot of information about our area and stuff like that that we would have never known. But
of course,
you know.
No, of course, I know that. I just, you know, I guess more of a purist that I like the cache, although I do like the earth caches because they're of a higher quality than many of the virtuals, not all of them, but than many of the virtuals.
Yeah, that is true.
I mean, I have been to a few very lame virtual caches, and it's only because the approver, he's not an approver now, he's a reviewer, but the old approver would not want to get into the wow factor, so they say, well, what the heck? You know, a sign here, a sign there, a sign there, go ahead.
Yeah. And that takes away the places you can put real caches because they're, you know, taken up with virtual caches. So,
yeah, but who's to say, you know? I'm myself, my wife and I have no children. We don't travel along the highways and need places to stop with young kids to go out and play and or take off on a weekend and do things or a day with kids. And so some of these what I don't enjoy caches would be very great for them. So that's okay too. I just going back on topic, I just was questioning the direction that this marriage between Groundspeak and Utah State Parks might lead in the future. Maybe I'm being paranoid. I don't know.
It's a very fine line to walk to keep caches in our public parks, but not make them caches that are, you know, for pay.
Well, I just hate to see the other entities getting into the geocaching business because I don't think they necessarily do a good job of it. Maybe I shouldn't have said that. Maybe that's not correct. But they're not your normal brand of geocachers who do these things. So maybe they need partnership with some other geocachers to get together to come up with something that is more reasonable. You know, a sprinkler box with three or four mobile homes surrounding you that you might dig in as well as climb up some of the nearby trees or stick your arms up in holes in the bottom of the trunks. I mean, how ridiculous can you look?
But, yeah, I would get pretty paranoid if I was the one staying in the home there, and there's people prying around for sprinkler boxes and looking up trees and stuff like that.
Well, three or four people doing it as a group might be one thing, but one sole person out there in the middle, not in the middle of the night, but early in the morning doing that type of stuff, that's kind of a nutcase.
Yeah, definitely. Well, hey, thanks for being on our show today. I think I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up. If you guys are listening to this recorded and you have any comments and you want to call in and leave a voice message, you can call 206-350-3GPS. That's 206-350-3477. And you can leave a message there for us. Or you can email us at xpunkx1@gmail. That's xpunkx1@gmail.com. And if you didn't get onto the live cast today, you didn't get a chance to listen live, remember that you can go to geocachingpodcast.blogspot.com for all the show notes and links to the stuff that we talked about today. And remember that this show is aired live Saturday, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So if you want to be a part of the show, make sure you go to talkshoe.com and sign up for yourself to get a free pin. And join us next Saturday where you can talk, you can call in live, you can talk to our guests. So thanks again for everybody who's joined us, and I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording now. Thanks, guys. Some of the music on the show today was provided by the Podshow PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.